In progress.
Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this morning's Transportation Planning Committee meeting to order. And I'll ask the clerk to please call the roll to establish our quorum.
Supervisor Miley.
Here.
Supervisor Halbert.
Present. Thank you very much. We have one item on the agenda today. This will be an information item, which is an update on the recommendations of the Planning Commission from the oversight of the implementation of the Baker-Tilly Development Process Review Report. I note that there are two attachments that we have received, and I will ask staff, do they have any introduction to this item? And afterwards, we will then receive a report, I believe, from the chairman of the Planning Commission, Mr. Crawford. Is that right? Is he online?
I don't know. I'm assuming
Can we check if Mark Crawford is online? Okay, so I guess this item, we do have an attachment that was an email.
Yeah, I can explain the attachments if you'd like.
Okay, very good.
The one that has my name at the top is an email that I sent to the chair, Mark Crawford, responding to his requests for the status of various recommendations from the Baker-Tilly report. And those were vetted through all the other agency heads, through Public Works and Fire, our own director and the building official, and environmental health as well. And so this was sort of my distillation of all their inputs. And I provided that to Mark back in March. And just for, you know, just so that you know how we responded to him versus what he put on his attachment, I think there's a little bit lost in translation, specifically in certain recommendations that we felt were already underway or being implemented, where he, for example, would say something was not implemented. So I just wanted to make sure that that wasn't being lost in translation when it got to your level. And so there's recommendation 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, and 13. And you can see the responses there from staff. And then also I think he kind of goes through the same ones, I believe. And as well as the 5 bullets. We didn't get a whole lot of information from at the staff level about any of these bullets. I mean, this was a subcommittee of the Planning Commission that didn't really involve staff, so I don't really know the background or why these ideas are being presented. So I think he probably will be able to speak to those best himself. I would say that the first two, in terms of providing spreadsheets, we never got a request for that information, but more than happy to provide that to the Planning Commission if they want to see a spreadsheet of all the planning applications submitted in 2024, and then all the applications that were submitted via our portal, the MainStar system thus far, which is probably around the same date, honestly. The bullet number 3 relating to fees and the appeals process and the environmental health, I can't really speak to those. Was it involved in that? I don't know exactly what the background is on those. But I would say, just, you know, generally speaking, you know, Baker-Tilly, you know, that report is about 2 years old now. We've implemented, I would say, the bulk of the recommendations, and we've moved on from some of the Baker-Tilly recommendations to really, I would say, refining our digital system. I mean, if you compare what we do now to pre-COVID in terms of people being able to submit applications online and track the process, they can track the referrals to the fire department or environmental health or building department. They can track that in real time at any time. You might remember one of the things that the building department used to say was that someone could submit for a building permit and check on it, you know, from anywhere in the world, 24 hours a day. Well, we're kind of in the same boat now, where you know, someone could submit and track it and correspond with staff at any time via the portal. And so we're just about wrapping up that whole transition. There is a number of, you know, we're government, so we have a lot of forms and procedures that we're trying to all migrate onto the portal and eliminate a lot of the the hard copy stuff that we have. And so the idea is that maybe not yet, but at some point, I think probably in the next 5 to 10 years, I mean, everyone will be doing digital submissions. There's still people that want to do paper submissions for whatever reason. But we're expecting that it will be a complete transition to submitting for planning online, you know, subdivisions, a new home, a new business, what have you. That'll all happen in a digital format, and they pay their fees online. And so it speeds up the process. And that is something that we're refining all the time. We meet with MainStar twice a month to go over the portal and just refine it. I mean, every little change or enhancement that we do requires, you know, more time than I want to admit to. But it is something where once we get it right, then I think it's going to be right forever, and it's just going to make the process better. So in terms of what we're spending our time on, that's, I would say that the bulk of it is spent refining MainStar and our processes. Back in December, you approved a contract with M Group. M Group is they're a Hayward-based planning consulting firm, and they're helping us refine a lot of our processes, some of it related to the housing element. They're helping us develop or complete our development guide and application checklist. Not necessarily super sexy stuff. It's all kind of, you know, government forms and procedures, but still very, very important to make sure that the public knows what to expect when they apply and to be able to track the process as they go through it. I'd say that in terms of Baker Tilly, there's probably a couple things that we still need to do. There's this idea of a project manager that would sort of oversee all the permits, all the departments, and kind of have the ability to, we call it different things, a permit coach or a permit concierge or something like that, someone that can really help troubleshoot permits and have some authority over all the different departments. That person, as far as I know, doesn't exist, and that may in the future, but that's one of the things that Baker Tilly did recommend that still requires some discussion. I think that's the only comments I have for now in terms of where we are with Baker Tilly. I think for the most part, we feel like we've accomplished the bulk of it. There might be a couple things that are left, but we've made great progress.
Supervisor Miley, any questions, comments? Did you have a chance to review these attachments?
Yes, Mr. President, I did.
Thank you.
Yeah, a few comments. Well, first of all, with the recommendation for a project manager, project coach, someone to coordinate, I keep thinking, once again, that could be a function that would be a part of the Office of Unincorporated Services that we're working on in a separate effort in the unincorporated area, so that folks in the unincorporated area feel that they're getting, you know, the attention they deserve. And if we create an Office of Unincorporated Services, the function of that office, one thing could be to coordinate and ensure appropriate, efficient permitting processes are being achieved across the various county departments that are responsible for permits. And I've mentioned that prior when this has come up in the past, but I just wanted to reference that and kind of see maybe if we were to have a report to this committee on the development of that office, we could begin to shape what we'd like to have that office do, and this could be one of those functions. That's one thing. The recommendation, I believe, around having environmental health be a separate department, I think it would be good if this committee were to have the staff from the county administrator's office, healthcare services agency, report to this committee on what that process might look like and what the rationale was around putting environmental health in the healthcare services agency. You know, that was done before even I was here. And I think, because I don't recall if it was a separate department many, many years, you know, moons ago, but I do recall hearing that it was, it used to be in public health, I think, then it was made its own separate department within Healthcare Services Agency. So maybe we might want to just kind of understand why that came about and if we want to make any recommendations on taking it out of the Healthcare Services Agency and make it at its own separate level county department with direct report to the Board of Supervisors. We would hire fire the department head. But I think before we go down that road, I would suggest we have some type of report to this committee so we understand the history of this and the rationale behind it. So those are my only two comments. I appreciate the Planning Commission, bird dogging this for us. And I'm not sure comprehensively what the next step would be, but those are two things that I'm focused on.
Okay, thank you very much, Supervisor Miley. And so I'm looking at this and it says, I'm looking at a recommendation number 7, assign, train, and empower designated building staff to be responsible for tracking and monitoring projects and resolving issues across disciplines during the building permit process. And that's listed as complete. So that was a request or a recommendation or it's on this page as recommendation number 7.
Yes, that was one of the
we're the ones that wrote complete.
Yes, we are. Yeah, okay. Actually, well, it's the building department did.
The building department did that. Okay. And is there agreement with the Planning Commission that truly complete, that there is somebody designated in the building department who is responsible for tracking and monitoring projects and resolving issues across disciplines? I'm assuming that's across departments.
Yes.
So who is that person?
I don't know if the building department is online.
Do we have anybody from the building department?
And I would suspect it's not just one person. It might be all the staff that have the function of being building inspectors. So Daniel's not on? That would be my suspicion, that it's not just one person, that all the building inspectors have been charged with that responsibility. But I'm just speaking out of school here. But yeah, but you're right. What is that?
Get them on the line.
Yeah. What is that?
Okay. All right. Then recommendation, until we get Daniel on the line, recommendation 8, identify issues early using comprehensive checklists and pre-application meetings, sequencing the process so key issues are identified and resolved early, i.e. toxic issues, on-site wastewater treatment systems, engineering, and we have a consultant hired until 12/25. That's the consultant you mentioned.
That's the M Group that is hired to help us in terms of developing our comprehensive checklists and our pre-application meetings. Although pre-application meetings are available now, a lot of it is refining a lot of the checklists. And we have tons of paperwork and forms, trying to create consistency between that and the main STAR system. And so that is the idea is that by the end of this year, we'll have that work completed.
Okay, I would like to have that group maybe come and attend one of these meetings, and just present what they found, what they've done, what they plan to do.
Just to clarify, that is for the planning department, not for environmental health or for public works.
Yeah, and so, for example, the recommendation is to identify and resolve issues between all the departments. So if the consultant is only hired to work with the planning department, then we'll need to get them on board with all the departments. So all the departments working with one consultant on a comprehensive system. I don't know, short of collapsing all the departments into one department, I don't know how else to do it. But it feels to me that if we have one consultant working with the building department to build, did they build MainStar?
That's an outside consultant as well.
MainStar. So we've got a lot of outcomes because Colton's working with different groups. Well,
MainStar is a unifying application, where the systems and processes between the departments are integrated. So that's why it's been a focus in terms of the permit applications and the portal, because that's where each of the departments integrate their services.
So are they are all integrated on MainStar right now?
Yes, they are, in terms of referral processes and sign-offs and such. But I'm only speaking for the planning department.
Yeah. No, I understand. I'm sensitive to that. I agree. Yeah. I understand. Well, if they can come to the TNP meeting and present what they've learned and found and done and what they plan to do until December of this year, then they can give us an update.
Sure.
Recommendation number 9 is to ensure smooth project management transition between entitlement and building permit phases of a project. So this is not implemented, and staff feels that the portal addresses this item. Is that true?
Well, I think this is one of the areas where there was something lost in translation. I mean, if you look at the other attachment, we do say that this is in place and that's used regularly to ensure a smooth transition between entitlements and building permits. So this is a situation, for example, if a project requires a site development review to build a new commercial building, they go through the planning process, however that may look, and once they get planning approval, they get the letter of approval to begin the building department. So then they kind of pivot from land use entitlements to getting the building permit. So, you know, your engineers, all of your structural calculations, architect, all that stuff. So, those professionals work together to submit for the building permit. At one point, it comes back to the planning department. And the question is this building permit, is this the same as the project that was approved by the planning department in that process? And so our role there is to sign off on it. It's just to say, yeah, this is the same project that we approved. And that doesn't take very long at all. Is for us to sign off on it. So in terms of that is one of the key functions of MainStar is to do that electronically so that we get an email saying, hey, we need your sign off on this. And we look at it and whoever was assigned to it initially, we'll look at it and say, yeah, this is the same project. It would only take a couple of days for us to sign off on it in that instance. So we feel that the electronic system does do this function, although it doesn't explain exactly the same way. But you know, the transition between entitlement and building permit should be relatively smooth for applicants. And in terms of the projects that the plan department sees, I would say that yes, this is definitely completed. Why Mark thought it wasn't implemented, I'm not really sure, but I believe that it is.
Would that not also be related to recommendation 7, which is to have somebody monitoring and resolving issues?
It's 7 is specifically for the building department, building staff, whereas number 9 actually includes planning and building.
But when number 7 says resolving issues across departments during the building permit process. So I see number 7.
They are similar. You're right. They are similar.
I see number 7 as what Nate talked about, which is somebody that could be perhaps within unincorporated services that would be responsible across departments. And so instead of saying not implemented, staff feels the portal addresses this item, I would hope we could say staff feels this can be served by recommendation 7.
Yep, I mean, potentially, yes, though. I think we could. There's definitely some overlap there. I think that number 9 really is talking about the transition between planning permits and building permits, where I think number 7 is mostly talking about building permits that potentially would have impacts across disciplines and across departments.
So, okay, I mean, I guess if Daniel considered, and I see Daniel's online, let's just get him online. Mr. Wildesenbet, welcome, thanks for joining.
Yes, sir.
So we're looking at an item to a recommendation which was to assign, train, and empower designated building staff, I'm sure several on your team, to be responsible for tracking and monitoring projects and resolving issues across disciplines during the building permit process. And when this says resolving issues across disciplines, does this mean only within the building permit with the building team? Or is this across disciplines, including the building permit process to include, say, fire, planning, environmental health, and others? When you say across disciplines, because this is listed as complete, so is that indicating that your staff is responsible for tracking and monitoring projects and resolving issues between different departments?
Once a building permit is issued, then the permit techs, each one of them, will be responsible for that specific permit. So once it's referred to planning or fire or anywhere else, anytime there's an issue during the building permit stage, they will coordinate with each department. And because it's also signaled on the portal itself, that it will show what the status is, where the coordination is, and each one of them are trained to do so, to respond to any inquiry and engage with planning or fire or environmental health if the question involves those specific departments. Yes, it's done. It's currently working very well, actually.
So if I'm an applicant and I have a question about the portal, and I grant that everything could be there and readily available, but it's not like people are trained, it's not like regular applicants understand exactly how to use the portal, they can go to somebody on your team and find out if there's an issue, they can help resolve it?
Through your team? Basically, it would be a matter of coordination. I mean, each department is responsible for their area, but if the applicant has any question, when they go online, they can hover over a specific area, gives you the individual responsible, the contact information, and they know how to communicate both by phone, email, or any other means they feel like necessary. So, yes, the client will be served effectively because they do not have to know exactly who else to talk to except the person that is in charge of that specific stage of the permit.
So a question then, if I'm an applicant and I happen to know the person in the building department and I call them or email them and ask questions, the building permit person may know that client should be referred to somebody in planning based on using the portal. They would know what that person in planning, who they are, what their name is. They could pass that on to the client. They could even help make sure that handoff is a good one.
Absolutely, because that's the whole value of the portal, because it kind of gives you all those details. You don't have to personally know the individual, but you know how to reach them. You know who the person is in charge of that specific activity within each department. So it is an absolutely seamless process where the individual client does not have to know anybody except the person they contact. And it doesn't have to be just building, by the way. They could reach out to planning staff or fire staff once they go online. They can find out who exactly in the other agencies or departments is working on the issue, so they can contact them. And our staff has been trained to make sure that they don't just refer the client, but actually do the actual legwork of contacting the appropriate expertise and provide the response to the client.
So for the planning department, if somebody were, an applicant were to call the planning person, would the planning person be able to go into the portal and know that it's with the building permit person or the fire person or the environmental health person? And could the planning contact also refer the applicant to the right place?
Yes, it works the same way for planning as it does building.
Okay. well, I don't have environmental health on here and I don't have fire on here, but if I were to ask them the same question, they are. Well, let's get somebody from environmental health on. Mr. Browder, excellent.
Good morning, can you guys hear me?
Yes, yes we can. Ron, have you been able to listen in a little bit?
I have.
Thank you.
When we get a plan, we log that plan into our database, and that particular plan is assigned to a senior inspector who does the plan check work.
And is that the same MainStar system that planning and building are talking about when they go on the portal?
That's correct. We are working on our portal for MainStar so we can have our unique portal. We're in the process right now of developing and refining our workflow, so that everything can be integrated, as Albert explained earlier.
Okay, in progress then. Great. And it's the same portal, it's connected, so the client goes to one portal, not two different portals, and our own people go to one portal, and a client can call anybody in any department, and that person should know where their project is stuck at what point.
Well, the current status of the project, yes.
The current status, yeah. Where you're currently, you know, who to go to next. And so an applicant could call all three and know where to go, and all three would say the same answer. You need to go to planning, you need to go to building, you need to go to environmental health. And I see Chief McDonald on as well. Is fire on the same portal, Chief? Do you know?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. President. We are on the portal.
Great.
And we same portal. Have access to the status of all the plans that we've received and where they are in the process.
All right. So I guess if a constituent applicant has made an application and they've gone through process, they've filled out the paperwork, they've working between planning and then building and referred to environmental health and or fire, if that person needed to call any one of the departments, their point of contact in any one of the departments, they would be told the same answer from all four people where their project is located, what status it is. Does that sound right? I think that's what I heard. Albert's nodding. I think Daniel's nodding. I think Ron and Chief McDonald, that's what we got an answer of. Okay. I mean, that's pretty cool. Now, I heard, Ron, you're on the process of doing that. Do you have a completion date for that?
Yes, hopefully before the end of the year. And that doesn't mean that we're going to be done because, as Albert explained earlier, there are going to be continual refinements. And with those refinements, you know, it makes the process even better. So it's all about, you know, just getting everything online, making sure that our workflow is proper in a way that it should be, so that all the other agencies that Environmental Health has to keep in contact with, the Water Board and so on, are part of that whole process.
Okay, very good. Let's switch gears slightly to recommendation 10, which is conduct an analysis of and update the planning current development and environmental health permit fee structures in support of improved customer service and recovering additional costs for providing these functions. Is this asking for a permit fee structure in support of improved customer service? What is this asking for, Albert?
Yeah, it was a little, it's a little vague. It does sound like it's suggesting that fees should be increased to capture the true cost of processing a permit. But it also says in support of improved customer service. So I think that the idea there is to make sure that we are moving as quickly as possible so that folks are not strung out for, let's say, months and months where we're somehow, you know, increasing their fees beyond what they should be. I mean, we don't do that. You know, we process a permit as quickly as possible, and try to make sure that we don't overcharge people for a planning application. Some applications extend beyond, you know, they can go on for years, in which case there may be some increase in fees. But the recommendation itself, you know, isn't totally clear to me. I have to go back and look at the Maine Star report to see what it says. I think that there's some, if you look at the Planning Commission, one of their recommendations is to make all their fees fixed. Our fees are on deposit, and they tend to be much more affordable than some of our neighboring jurisdictions. So I don't think we're overcharging people, generally speaking. And so I think that if we can focus on the improving customer service piece of which we've been talking about, I think our fees are very competitive when you compare them to other jurisdictions. And that, you know, it goes along with that is, you know, making sure that we do recover the actual costs of what these services are costing the county. And that's mostly going to be a function of staff time. If something requires a lot of staff time, lots of appeals, going back to the MAC a few times, and if it's appealed to the Board of Supervisors, all that, it gets charged to the applicant. And so if you have an easy permit, you know, you're going to go through relatively easy. If you have a difficult permit that's contested, then it's going to end up costing you more in time and money. And that's what we require an initial deposit, and then we bill against that. And if it goes beyond that, then we have to go back and collect from the applicant.
And if I can add, President, the fee study or the user fee study has not been conducted since, you know, it's been a couple decades, nearly a couple decades. So we're not opposed to doing a user fee study at some point, though, as Albert said, we do time and materials, much like the city of Hayward, for many of our more complex projects or applications. There are some things that we're making changes to, obviously. We're talking about the web portal. We're talking about processes with MainStar and integrating our systems more with all our colleagues. So if we were going to look at this user fee study, I would propose that we do that after some of these other changes and enhancements are done. So then it's more reasonable for our users or our clients to get the accurate assessment of how long it might take for a fee to be conducted. At this point, it's time and materials. So, we're doing 100% cost recovery. If we're doing our proper billing, we're doing 100% cost recovery. There are some fees, like the appeal fees, where your board decided to have a lower fee in order to bring a project to an appeal so that it could give opportunities for the community or opposing parties to bring that to your board. It's half the price of that of the city of Hayward and Dublin as well. So your board would have to consider for the fees what policies you want to implement after the study. So it's not as easy to state that all fees should be fixed fees. I think a study would be needed before that could be determined. And the Planning Commission had noted that it should just be all changed to fixed fees. So I would propose to do a user fee study at a later time, as well as decision making with regard to what type of fee it should be, time and materials to be done after the study.
Yeah. So as I read recommendation 13, revisit the permitting system setup and configuration to incorporate agreed upon charges to the process improvements in this report. I the agreed upon charges. I'm not sure if
that's his changes.
Agreed upon changes. Configuration to incorporate agreed upon changes. Okay. Yeah, I note that this is sort of in work towards planning for a July. The planning department will meet. Oh, insufficient data. So I'm reading this. It says that they're really looking for more data to confirm that the planning department will meet a July 1 deadline to address the 51 Baker Tilly. So these 13 or so recommendations, or 6 through 13, are a subset of 51 other recommendations that you're looking to hopefully get online by July 1. All right. So if I hear the fee schedule process, it's time and materials. We provide an estimate up front. We ask for a check, and we bill against that. If it goes over that, we ask for more. If it goes less than that, we give a refund. Does that sound about right?
That's correct.
Okay. When we do that, are we very clear with the applicant that it is just an estimate and that we will be asking for more?
Oh, yes. We're very transparent about that.
Then I guess where I think I hear some complaints, not all, but some, are that we may be requiring applicants to do more than they thought they would have to do when they first met for the project. That's what I think I hear. And they're concerned that they're either over-engineering or over-required or over what should be required. If they are in that situation, who do they appeal to?
Well, that really depends on which department you're referring to. That sounds more like not planning, because I mean, we don't necessarily have technical, like building code or environmental health code that we follow. We follow the planning code, which is mostly land use. I would say, less technical. But in our case, for example, if I was to make a determination as a plan director that says, oh, you need to do X, Y, Z, any decision that I make can be appealed to the Planning Commission. And then from there, it can be appealed to the Board of Supervisors if somebody wanted to do that.
Is that the same for building, environmental health, and fire? So that's a question for building first. If somebody has a question with either the fees they're being charged or the inspections that are being done on their property or what they're being asked to do, is there an appeals process?
So, like Albert said, building is governed by the building code. So there's no ambiguity as to what's required, what's not required. The building official is given the authority both by your board and the state to make that determination. So if there is any fee scheduling consistencies, by the way, the fee schedules are set annually by your board. So that's also a fixed number there that is available for the client to see. It's based on valuation of the improvements. So there's really not much of anything to appeal, really, when you look at building permits and building code related matters. If there are any technical type of issues, the building official could convene a group of building officials from the surrounding area to discuss any specific technical variation, which in my last 25 years here has never happened before. So there are really no technicalities that rise to a point where it's not, there's ambiguity as to what needs to be done when it comes to building permit.
So environmental health, if there's a question on the issuance of a permit or questions that are being asked or working through that process, is there an appeals process?
Yes, there is. You may remember a year or so ago through the OWTS Commission, we established an appeal process, and your board approved that.
Very good. And Chief McDonald, is that true in the fire department?
We are regulated by the technical code, as is building, so it's a fire code. I think there are times when it's believed that our interpretation of what the code says has been challenged. We don't have an appeal process for that, but we do have the ability for the applicant to to challenge the requirement.
Very good. No, I appreciate that. I think that when we talk about somebody who is monitoring the progress of projects, that is able to resolve issues across departments, that's sort of an appeals process in and of itself. I'm stuck, I have a problem, I have a question, I don't know that I'm getting the right answer, or that there must be something that we can do to get past this. Is somebody, that's sort of an ability to be an ombudsman or a project manager that can help me get through that. Short of that, an appeal process to the Planning Commission or the board. And I'd rather not have to have appeals happen. I'd rather have somebody being able to look across that. So Supervisor Miley, if that person sits in an unincorporated services department that we create, or if that person sits, we talked about a permit czar in the past or whatever, what's our thought about that? To me, that's like almost better than an appeals process, because then we don't get appealed.
I think that would be better. Once again, it depends on the authority of that person and where that person is within the county structure. It might be better in the county administrator's office, particularly if we create an office of unincorporated services that's a function of the county administrator's office. Because as like the chief pointed out and Public Works pointed out, some of the matters that come up for concern are regulatory in nature. And maybe depending on the interpretation, working with that staff person who has the function to work with all four departments or entities, we'd be able to sort through what the delay or difficulty or the discretion might be, as opposed to having an appeal come to us or to a commission,
okay,
like the BZA or something.
All right. I'm rereading bullet point 3, and indeed it is asking for permit fees to be fixed amounts when it relates to implement recommendation 10, immediately requiring all permit fees to be fixed amount. And if I read number 10, conduct an analysis of and update the planning current development and environmental health permit fees in support of improved customer service. So, yeah, their bullet point seems to relate to they want fixed amounts. Is that the difference between the two?
That's what I was referring to in terms of having a user fee study before deciding whether or not a fee should be fixed or it should be at cost. And so I think it's a little premature on the recommendation that a study would be needed first. Besides, a fee schedule is kind of complex in terms of relating it to board policies as to when we'll decide on a subsidy versus 100% recovery. So I'm just saying that user fee study should come before deciding.
In our experience, do these fees vary or when we charge an amount that we is an estimate? So the estimate is always the same for everybody. Basically, it's a fee structure that
deposit,
is the same.
Okay. The deposit is the same for everyone.
So let me ask this. How many times do we go above it and have to collect more? And how many times do we go below it and have to refund? And how many times does it kind of work out to be about right?
That's a great question. I don't know that we've done that type of analysis, but we can do that. I mean, I do know we give refunds quite often as well, but I'm sure on the other hand, there are many that go over for the more complicated projects.
I'm not looking for a exact number of which, just sort of qualitatively, because if we're always giving refunds, then we maybe not have to charge as much. If we're always asking for more, maybe we have to charge more up front. It's kind of where I was going.
Exactly.
That.
So I think we'd have to do more analysis on that.
But again, either way, I think it gets down to, are we over complicating our process and costing people more or causing more time to go by? I also understand that if you have it expire, you have to renew your permit, pay another fee, and arguably you're not starting over, you're just progressing. So do we actually charge people another fee if the year goes by or the second year goes by and their application expires?
Yeah, that comes up more in the building department than for planning.
Back to Daniel. Mr. Wildesenbeck.
Yes. Yes, sir. How
does that work?
If it's well established in the ordinance, number one, if you want to extend, the permit lasts basically 1 year. If you want to extend, you pay an extension fee and you can do it. But then if it goes beyond, for example, a 3-year window where the building code is changing, you have now to follow a brand new building code and the triennial update, then that will be almost sometimes considered as a new application because it is a brand new process. Now, the one thing I want to caution you is everything that we do is on cost recovery basis. So it's not, I don't think the county can make money out of these kind of transactions. So we only charge based on cost recovery. So the building permit, the permit is usually given for 1 year. They can ask for an extension of another year. But the third year will be where sometimes some people have a challenge if they cannot do it without much time, is because the building code might update to a point where they might have to redesign their project.
So, Daniel, how many times do we charge a fee for a permit and it turns out that it was exactly what we needed, we didn't have to do a refund? Or how many times do we have to charge more because it took longer? Do we happen to know qualitatively?
Not exact numbers, but we can let you know as to how many people have asked for an extension. I would say about 85% of the time, everything is done as planned. People do this thing properly. There might be about, I would say, a 10-15% request for an extension, and that's usually done by the applicant's request. So, and then very rare where people have to go past the 3-year window. I would say, maybe one every 5-6 years. I don't recall a lot of them happening. So it is not, we really don't have a lot of issues when it comes to fees. They're very transparent. People know exactly what they need to do. And usually it's the applicant that usually needs some flexibility in terms of timing. Sometimes they run into financing problems. Sometimes they change their mind on their project and restart again. So these are the minor things that we use to accommodate them. But as a cost recovery organization, we have to recover the cost. So we usually try to facilitate that people do this in a timely manner so that it doesn't cost them extra.
And Ron, is your department on time and materials? And if so, how are we charging people enough or issuing refunds or costing, adding more to the invoice as people go through their project?
Well, our fee schedule is based on a fee study that was done maybe about 10 years ago. We haven't raised our fees except for one time. I think it was around 2017, right before COVID, because we added some new types of food facilities. We needed more inspectors, so we did that. It was maybe a 10%, 15% increase in fees. But fees haven't been increased since then. COVID created another situation for us where we had to be more flexible with our operators who were, unable to operate or operate at a lesser capacity than they had been before. And so per the board's request, we were being flexible as far as fees and permit fees and so on. Specifically for plan review, it's no different than what building does and planning. We have a deposit refund set up, and it depends on the type of project, what the initial deposit would be. But that was all part of the fee study. And the idea was to try to calculate each one of those plan review fees so that it would be appropriate for that type of facility. And so there wouldn't be any refunds or additional costs based on that fee study. And it's been working well. And we haven't had any issues. Every now and then, there's going to be someone who cancels their project and we refund the deposit, what's left over. But there is one other caveat. Our plan check approvals are for 1 year. And within that 1 year's time, they should be getting their building permits. And if they haven't done that, we have them to come back. So the building department is looking at a set of plans that has a current approval date.
So I guess, Ron, in your department, I would feel better because you don't control the overall timing of the other permits. If somebody takes longer than a year, are you saying that they have to repay their permit fee?
No, I didn't say that. I said they had to resubmit their plan so they can be restamped with a current approval date. That's good for another year.
Resend their plans. If their project hasn't changed.
Restamp. We stamp the plans with an approval stamp where we sign it and date it. And inspectors have a license number. And so it's official, that approval stamp. The reason why we do that and we try to stamp each page is because we've had some forgeries in the past. And so we look at each page and we stamp each page to make sure that the billing department and whoever else needs to look at those plans understand that we have approved them.
I got it. Okay. All right. Very good. Well, I guess I'm still a couple of things with regard to all of this. The idea was to have a discussion with us. The Planning Commission asked us to discuss this, asked us to have these conversations. I'm assuming the Planning Commission is looking to continue the dialogue. Are they planning to bring this to their meetings in the future? I think I heard quarterly at some point. Are they going to have this on their agenda quarterly until completed?
I think that was discussed a while back, but I don't think it's come to the Planning Commission on a quarterly basis. Maybe somewhat regularly, but I don't think they have an item every 3 months.
Do we envision at some point it'll until... When will we determine that the Baker-Tilly report has been fully implemented?
I think there's probably one or two things that we probably need to discuss. One of them was that the issue of the project manager across departments. Mm-hmm. That seems to be the big ticket item. As far as I'm concerned, a lot of the things that, the other, 44 or so of the recommendations have been met, completed, and so... there's some on there that we probably aren't going to do in the short term. I think there was one recommendation, for example, to rewrite our entire zoning code, which is a very big ticket item in terms of just how much that would cost. And so that one we're probably going to kick into the future. That's just one example. There's a couple others that we're probably not going to do in the short term or even the medium term. I think for the stuff that is, the ones that have been identified are probably the ones that are remaining. And out of these, I think there's probably only one or two that are probably going to need more work before we can say they're implemented. And at that point, I think we can say that the Baker-Tilly report has been implemented in full.
Okay. Big ticket item being a permit coordinator / ombudsman, as you mentioned.
Yes, yeah.
And I see Supervisor Miley also pointed it out, environmental health being a standalone department or not. So those are two items that I guess we'll continue to schedule discussion on.
That last one, I believe, was not from Baker-Tilly, though.
I think it was.
Some of the bulleted items are not from Baker-Tilly. I will point out, though, that there were some other policy recommendations with regard to, minimizing the public process. That was also in the Baker-Tilly report. So there are some recommendations in there that I think we could get your board's guidance as to whether or not those those policy recommendations are something you want us to move forward on. Not all of those 51 recommendations are, that might not be as seen as being something we want to move forward.
All right, Supervisor Miley.
Yeah, because when Sandy brought that up just now, it's, if you can think of it, President Halbert, in the unincorporated area, we've got three MACs, potentially, well, Sunol, a MAC, and potentially an East County MAC. We've got the BZA. And if you think about that in the context of Dublin, when you were mayor, imagine, and then we got the Planning Commission, imagine if you had all that process before something got to the Dublin City Council. That's quite a bit. So I think the way we have structured things for the unincorporated area, it might need to be revised or tinkered with or keep the status quo. But I do think there's a lot of processes because we try to make sure all the communities have the ability to have a role and a say in this, that, and the other before something either gets to the BZA or the Planning Commission and then to the Board of Supervisors. And that does, the roadshow does produce a lot of work and processes for the staff. Yeah. So I'm not saying we need to change it, but I think that's one of the things that needs to be kind of looked at around policy to see if there's any tinkering we can do with that to make a more expedited but transparent and fair process for the communities that are being served in the unincorporated area. Because I think about it when I was on the City Council in Oakland, things come from the Planning Commission to the City Council. If things had to go to every community or region within the City of Oakland before it got to the Planning Commission by staff, that's just a tremendous undertaking. So I don't know. We might want to just take a look at that and any of the other policy considerations. And then I was also thinking when the questioning was taking place, staff is saying a lot of this has been implemented. And the Baker-Tilly report's about 2 years old from what I've heard. I think it'd be interesting to see how many, what's the universe of permits that we've been dealing with over what period of time? It'd be a set time frame, 6 months, a year, whatever the time frame is. And what's been the progress made on those permits? Had there been any delays? Had there been any issues? Or are things really working well? Because, as staff's pointed out, we've gotten most of the recommendations implemented, and we just have a few outstanding that would allow for us to make it even better. I don't know, just a thought, because I don't know what the universal permits are that we're dealing with presently, and what's been, if we were tracking that for this committee to see, we could see, for example, maybe there have been 500 permits over the last 6 months, maybe not even the last 6 months. We'd say this is June, July through December of last year. And this is the progress that's been made on those 500 permits. 200 have been, dealt with. Another 100 are still pending. And the other 200 are stalled for different reasons, of which these recommendations, if we implemented these other recommendations, would help to move them along. I'm just kind of trying to understand where we are in terms of making things better.
Given that we're using technology and we have these portals and all of that, I like the idea of a management report, so to speak, that department heads could view, but that we could see quarterly, that the planning commission, if they wanted to, could see. Especially, I think I would focus in on the amount of projects that are going over the recommended time frame. So if somebody applies for something and the stated duration is, you know, it should be done in 6 months, well, let me ask the question. When people apply for things, are they generally given a feeling for how long something should take?
Yes, that information is on the portal. Once they select a permit, it says this permit generally takes, you know, between 2 and 3 months or 4 to 6 months, or could be a year for like a major subdivision, yeah, something like that.
So there's an expectation set and agreed to up front. We know it doesn't always have to happen that way. Things happen. But for us to know how many applications are in the pipeline, which ones are on track, how many, and which ones are over, how many, and then, you know, a designation. You know, we took too long, understandable, people are on vacation, whatever, the applicant too long, or the project scope changed and the scope is now greater and therefore will take longer, and that's been communicated to the applicant and all is good. But some sort of a management report that department heads could see and that we could see, almost like the report of fines and fees that we approve every month. We could just see a report on consent. Would that be achievable? I mean, to me, it would be something that I would hope. I wouldn't want to create extra work. I would want it to be something that would be useful to the department heads. And I know I'm looking at planning because they're in the room, but I should be looking online at
Supervisor, I think I have to go to another meeting, but I'd like to comment on your comments and Nate's. Absolutely. That's one of the reasons we have these apps, this portal. It gives you just about every detail that you want to know about a specific permit or a collective information of permits. That's how we manage. The management reports are the basis for our daily decisions here. And I know the same with the other departments. So we can provide you any information that you want. I think, you know, I've said this before. Some of these recommendations and stuff is like some solution looking for a problem type of situation from my perspective, because when I look at the data, what the data says and the raised concerns that you're expressing don't align at all. So things are working extremely well. There are going to be some issues with, especially with your discretionary permit process, because it takes a long time. I think Nate was really hitting it on the nail. It takes a lot of outreach, a lot of effort, a lot of meetings, a lot of getting to various bodies of decision making and input. And that's going to take time. And, you know, unfortunately for building, we don't have to do that because it is governed under regulatory framework. But those are not discretionary permits. The discretionary permits are the ones that planning and others are doing. And the fundamental issue there is there's an enormous public engagement involved by the direction of your board, by the policy of your board. That's going to take a long time to accomplish. So I think deciphering these things, you'll find out based on the portal's data that there are really, from my perspective, there are really very little inconsistencies or poor customer service that's going on when we look at the data. And we can provide you that information in any form that you want it. It's the data is already there. And we make decisions daily on the basis of those data. And I can tell you exactly how long a permit has been sitting in anybody's desk, which department, how long since it came in, when it was, you know, reviewed and submitted back to the applicant. When did the applicant respond back? We found out recently, for example, a lot of the time between permit you know, submittal and approval is once we submit reviews to the applicant, sometimes they sit on it for 2, 3, 4, 6 months, 8 months, and that's counted into the process. And you would think the process is taking too long. No, that's accommodating the applicant so that they can do meet their needs. So I would say Let's not just kind of spin some of these things. Let's look at the data. Let's look at what the data says. And I totally agree with Nate. I mean, it literally is a lot of effort to go from one body to another, to another, to another, to get to the final decision-making. And if that's frustrating the community, that's something I think your board need to address.
All right.
I want to say that I want to meet another important project of your supervisor, Harbert. They're waiting on me.
Yeah.
So, but Alan is online, building official. You can, I ask him to cover for me.
Daniel, thank you. No, I want to distinguish a policy change that affects each individual community, such as example, we went through the definition of a pool. Is it part of FAR? We want people to be able to weigh in. Okay, I get that. That's different than I have a project in my Castro Valley project. That doesn't have to go to all the other MACs. I have a project in my Sunol wastewater treatment system. That doesn't have to go to all the MACs. Those individual problems, sticking points, application that gets stuck, that's what I'm trying to resolve. That doesn't go through all the MACs. And so if we have to limit either the policy changes that we make, we designate one body to be the maker of that, and that may be the Planning Commission, and they decide for all of Alameda County, and we don't have to go to all the MACs, we can make that decision. It's either that or we decide whatever that policy change, who it most likely will affect, and only talk to them. We could decide to do that. We don't have to talk to everybody on everything. But policy decisions are one thing. A permit applicant who has a sticking point with his project is a very different thing. And that's what we're trying to resolve. And what I heard was, we can have a report that would show how many projects are stuck and at what point. I was told that we have the ability for our applicants to already know who to call if they have a problem, and there's somebody in every department that knows where their project is and can advise them. And if that person calls all three or four people, they'll get the same answer about their project. That'll be great to go see how that works. We could hire an ombudsman, and we'll get a report at some point on whether to do that. And we'll continuously monitor our improvement processes in the portal. Supervisor Miley?
Yes. I would suggest maybe have staff come back after the recess, either to this committee, definitely this committee, because we're kind of monitoring all this and managing all this, either in October, November, or December, but before the end of the year, if possible, and give us, from the last fiscal year, 24-25, it's like a dashboard. How many permits were presented? You know, if we can see a dashboard, what was presented? What was the resolution? You know, just provide us that information. That information is transparent. The public has it as well. So that's one thing that kind of is related to the management report that you're talking about. Give us that dashboard. If the information is already there, both Daniel and Albert were saying that, you know, this is something we should be able to get. Because as you said, we don't want people to have to do more work. But if it's there, provide that to this committee, because we are very interested in monitoring and understanding what's happening based on the fact that the Baker-Tilly study went through, and we're hearing a lot of the recommendations have been implemented. Some haven't. So one thing. Second thing is, I had forgotten about the policy stuff. If we could have staff come back at the same TMP meeting with the policy items for us to review and decide what to do with those policy items, I think that would be helpful as well. And then if we want to, I can have my staff bring to this committee the work that's being done around the Office of Unincorporated Services so we can get a better handle on that. A lot of that's been going through the Unincorporated Services Committee, but we could bring that information forward as well so this committee could get a sense of would that office help to function to alleviate or implement a recommendation under Baker-Tilly, specifically around coordination, or if it's a function that needs to be taken elsewhere. And then, Mr. President, if you know, obviously we could take it to the health committee, but the health committee's pretty busy with a lot of stuff going on. I would really like to have this committee take a look at if we want to make environmental health a separate department, to bring that information to this committee so it can at least be discussed and digested to decide whether or not that's something we want to recommend the board to pursue. So
would that also be after recess?
Oh, all of this after recess.
All of that,
yes,
after recess.
But hopefully before the end of the year.
Would that also include the discussion of hiring an ombudsman or a project coordinator?
Yeah, that would be taken up as part of the discussion of an Office of Unincorporated Services. So you could determine whether or not that office could function at, you know, with that ability, or if we need to have a separate individual or persons to do that work.
Very good. I agree with everything said. Is that very clear before the end of the year? I would say not even look at December. November? October, November. Okay. Is there any public comment on this item?
Caller, you're on the line. You have 2 minutes, Kelly.
Yes, this board has, in effect, outsourced policy recommendations and to policy generation, policy formulation, to an outside consultant, the Pacertilly or whoever they are. And so now here we are just worried about how do we implement all these recommendations that came to us from on high from an outside consultant. But one of the, and even those recommendations are being done very shoddily, like the one point of contact. We used to hear about the project manager, but Mr. Waldesenbett has set up a system where there are 6 points of contact. There is no project manager. And the building department coordinator is just a glorified Rolodex, you know. He just tells you where to call, or he or she. And then the fixed fee schedule, you know, that's revised every year, according to Mr. Waldesenbett. Well, that's based on the historic pricing, not a fee study. You know, if you look at what the planning director is telling you, they need to do another fee study. It hasn't been done in 20, 30 years. And then this board is adhering to this consultant recommendation line by line, item by item. And what you forget is that there was 10 years ago, there was another independent report called the Alameda County 2015 Grand Jury Report that said the Board of Supervisors directly participates in hiring and reviewing department heads, which creates a culture where political interference is allowed to permeate the day-to-day administration of county business. That's their finding. Now, the recommendation is that the Board of Supervisors must take steps to have the county charter amended to relinquish the control of hiring of non-elected department heads to the county administrator. Did you forget about that recommendation? Do you guys only listen to outside consultants and not to your own grand jury report? And this Department of Environmental Health restructuring flies in the face of the grand jury report. Thank you.
Okay, then item two is public comment on items not on the agenda. Anybody from the public wishing to speak on items not on the agenda?
Caller, we're on public comment. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you so much for adhering to the agenda and not just, you know, jumping out of your seats and running away from the room and skipping over these public comment items. This shows very good adherence to the Brown Act today. The Department of Environment and Health reporting directly to the Board of Supervisors, that's a classic example of where you just say, and it's a shame that Supervisor Miley isn't here to listen to this, by the way. You know, do we even have a quorum here today? Is there a quorum right now, I would ask, in this meeting? And is this a legal meeting of the Board of Supervisors? Oh, maybe it's legal now. Okay, great. Let's continue with this Board of Supervisors meeting. I should get my time back, right? Because when I was talking with when there was no quorum. Anyway, so another office that would possibly report directly to the county office of county administrator was to be the Office of Unincorporated Services. But if you look at the office, the county administrator, she has no direct reports right now. She has some employees in her own department, but no department reports to the county administrator. This would be the first department that the county administrator's office would have.
report. All the rest of these direct reports, they're reporting to the Board of Supervisors. So what a strange thing you're doing. You're really asking for a new level of management skill, a new kind of management, administrative management from your county administrator, which is a step in the right direction, I guess. And then this, the idea to have a management and performance audits of all county departments, in addition to fiscal audits, where would those audits go? Would they go to the county administrator or would they go to the Board of Supervisors again? Is this just another way to consolidate power in the hands of the Board of Supervisors and not in the hands of the county administrator as the grand jury recommended 10 years ago? Really, this whole process is highly suspect. Thank you.
I have no additional speakers for public comment.
Very good. Thank you much. With that, we are adjourned.